Greetings, everyone. Are you ready for an accelerated course in higher consciousness? This is how our global village will get ahead of the accelerated rate of change we are now seeing in the world. It won't be with the same consciousness that created the problems we see. It will be with a new consciousness that is now evolving with the angels of our better nature. Welcome to Cosmic Love. Have you ever considered what will happen when the language of cosmic love becomes common sense with a common language? Are you aware that this love language is, in fact, the learning process, the creative process, and the processes of consciousness at the quintessential foundation of self-governance? Think about that. Such a language of consciousness has the potential to involve and evolve our individual and collective consciousness. This is what cosmic love is all about, higher conscience. Give yourself a checkup from the neck up. What do you think will happen to your world and the world at large as we become more conscious of how we are conscious, both individually and collectively? I'll give you a big hint. Take a good look at the worldwide web of consciousness that the internet has created. Consider this new net reality for what it truly is, a global revolution in higher consciousness. The instant, everywhere, interactive internet has eliminated space and time. We're all connected in a global village now. All knowledge is at your fingertips. Knowledge power as never before known to humanity. But where's the cosmic love, you may ask? There's a new net reality shaping the consciousness of humanity. Freedom to know better and the opportunity to do better has far outpaced the ability of our core institutions to keep up with the revolutionary capabilities for all humanity. That's what the internet represents, the evolving consciousness of humanity, the collective consciousness of humanity, and the collective future of humanity. That's where cosmic love comes in. Any good metaphysician with his finger on the pulse of humanity could tell you that. If you step out of the box of contemporary groupthink and if you become an objective observer of the evolutionary ascent of net reality caused by the internet, you will not only see a huge wave of change coming, but also the nature of that change and the role that cosmic love will play in change events. There is a natural evolutionary path to these changes. Cosmic love is a blueprint for that change. It always has been. But humanity is just beginning to grasp the multidimensional consciousness required to navigate the vast, uncharted realm of inner space, the internet, at the heart of the internet. This is the new global village consciousness that is defining the collective conscience of humanity. Let's get real. Net reality is what we make it. Where do you think it's going? How do you think we'll get through the birth pangs of a new world being born? Are you ready for the next big thing in the computer internet revolution? Would you agree that the best way to predict the future is to create it? Cosmic love is the answer to these questions. All I ask is that you listen and learn. See how you can catch the biggest wave of opportunity in history. I'll explain how you can ride that wave for phenomenal win-win benefits for yourself and all humanity. Those hearing this are obviously computer literate, so connect the dots. Get a grip on the net reality of global connection with the benefits of cosmic love. Someone has to do it. May it begin with us, united sovereigns in a united state of cosmic love. Always victory when we love enough, keep the faith, get the vision, embrace the virtue, make the vow, and claim the victory of cosmic love in your world and the world at large.
Greetings, every soul. This is Christopher Rudy with Cosmic Love for July 16th, 2011. Today I'm going to be interviewing Stephen McFadden, who's the author of The Call of the Land, an agrarian primer for the 21st century. We'll be discussing food security, economic stability, environmental repair, and cultural renewal. Stephen, thank you for being on our show today.
Thanks for inviting me, Christopher.
I'm really excited to see this book. A lot of what you go into, I think, is extremely timely in the face of rising food prices. This whole interest and concern of families, neighborhoods, communities, schools, and churches, you know, to meet the challenge of caring for the land and providing an ample supply of clean food is huge. And I was tuning into your book, The Call of the Land, and understanding that's your second edition, and it goes into this subject deeper as an agrarian primer for the 21st century. And I was also looking at some of your other books. You've done a lot of books on native wisdom, Twirling Rainbow, other books that deal with native cultures and native wisdom. And perhaps we'll have time to get into that also.
Yeah, I think the connection is they all have to do with the care of the earth, whether we're coming at it from a native perspective or from an agrarian perspective, looking at the way the land is cultivated.
Yeah, and I think there's a thinning of the veil going on right now. We discussed that in quite a few of our shows, and where earth meets heaven is a certain kind of practical spirituality. And I think the 70s movement of back to the land, or this whole concept of on earth as in heaven, as I like to think of it, I think it has a certain relevancy right now, that the only solution to human problems are, you might say, inspired, divine, or natural solutions. And
I agree with you, Christopher. And, you know, earlier in the week, I think it was on Tuesday, the New York Times published a major story about the drought here in the United States, which stretches from Arizona over to Georgia and Florida, 14 states in what they're calling conditions that rival or exceed the Dust Bowl of the 1930s. And
really,
you put that together with what's going on in Africa, where they are experiencing the greatest famine in all of human history, and then China is also seized with a major drought. And I won't go into those details other than to say the evidence of profound shifts taking place on the earth, and in particular on the parts of the earth that we use to produce our food supply, are front and center right now. So in writing The Call of the Land and the other books, I, you know, have encouraged people to snap out of it and recognize that it is really time to go into action and do something on the land that is practical in terms of producing food, and as you suggested, practical spirituality. You know, yes, do your prayers, your dances, your songs, carry your good heart energy into the land as you're working it. I think that's a great phrase you've coined, practical spirituality.
Well, I've been trying to tune into the archetypes of wholeness, and I've understood that the four winds, so to speak, of the medicine wheel of the Indian cultures corresponds to the four archetypal fire, air, water, and earth, you know, archetypes of Jung, Carl Jung, and the collective consciousness.
Yes.
And that there's the principle of having your feet on the ground, as any cloud buster can understand, you know, being down to earth. And then there's the concept of having your head in the clouds. And
I'm laughing, Christopher, because I'm recalling a phrase from the 70s where we had a lot of people who, maybe it was the energy of that era, who got blasted into the clouds. And do you remember the phrase, bliss ninnies?
No.
Well, they were just totally, you know, and it was wonderful to see people so spiritually enlivened, but they lost the practical connection. And,
right.
To go too far in either direction is a mistake. You really need to strive for the balance.
And the idea is to have your feet on the ground and head in the clouds.
Exactly.
In other words, on earth as in heaven. You know, that's another metaphor for that. And and there's also, you know, the balance of, like, the left hand and the right hand, or the left brain and the right brain.
Mm-hmm.
And in other words, this whole thing of balance of the four winds, of the four archetypes, and being centered and connected, you know, at the heart of the medicine wheel. And then strong medicine is that strong balance. And so I've been kind of tuning in my own archetypal metaphoric way to these concepts, but I've been coming around to increasingly gardening, which is, you know, kind of new for me. My parents did it a lot, and of course my father came from a farm out of the Depression where that's what they did. And they had their own gardens, and it's coming around to a lot more people are realizing the importance of things like seed libraries and getting the heritage seeds and just practical skills with, I mean, I've read about people on just a few acres growing enough food for their whole family.
Oh, yeah, that can definitely be done, and there are... Well, I was going to say thousands, but it's no exaggeration to say millions of people in the United States and Canada and in countries all around the world who, I would say in the last 10 years, have really created an explosion of agrarian initiatives, not just in the countryside, but also in the suburbs and the cities. So much is going on. And when I wrote The Call of the Land, and I'll just plug my website here, it's pretty simple, thecalloftheland.com. So when I wrote the book, the first edition in 2009, I presented a little bit of theory, but then mainly model after model after model of what different households, whether they be traditional families or some kind of more modern constellation of people drawn together, but households and then neighborhoods and then communities and more widely cities and regions, and then systemically, all of the initiatives. And so when somebody looks at the book, they're going to encounter model after model after model and can kind of see where they might fit in, where could they put their good creative energy. You know, I probably sound like a revivalist preacher when I say I really feel everybody needs to be involved either in producing good, clean food or directly supporting others, the farmers and gardeners, who are their ambassadors to the earth, and making it possible by supporting them directly financially as well as in every other way, because they touch the earth for you if you don't touch it yourself. And
yeah,
that connection, you know, I mean, just to cast it in the context, not so much of the droughts and the food shortages, but also of just earth changes in general, all of the traditional elders I've ever traveled with, and that's probably, you know, three or four dozen traditional wisdom keepers, including many of the Mayan elders, they all talk about the earth changes. And not that this is the end of the world coming up on December 21st, 2012, but rather it's the end of the calendar, and it is marked by earth changes. We stay alive.
And it is going to be a big test for survival.
It is already.
And that's one of the reasons I think this is such a timely subject. And we've had quite a few authors on the show and people that are really steeped in this understanding of portents for earth changes, the frequency and intensity of earthquakes and volcanism.
Mm-hmm.
And just the full range of weather patterns, the drought, and this, I mean, there is a serious heat wave in the center of the United States. It's just burning up the heartland of America right now.
I'm in Nebraska, and we were up to around 98 today, but one feels like one's being suffocated. It's tough out there on the street.
Well, up in here in Montana, we're getting these very hot winds out of the southwest that come up through this area, and it's that same suffocating, you know, kind of a heat where it's just oppressive. And people in Montana don't have air conditioners as a general rule.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it is really a timely subject, I am very interested in, you know, how to make this sustainability thing work. And I've been, you know, getting into growing more in raised beds around my place. And I'm seriously looking at, again, things like seed libraries and getting storage,
yes,
getting the seeds in. I've got some basic skills down. And preparedness, I'm an old Eagle Scout, and, you know.
Oh, well, congratulations. I was a Scout, too, and went as far as STAR, so I can appreciate the effort and talent that it takes to get to Eagle. And for folks out there listening who aren't aware, it really requires a young man to master a very wide set of skills and anybody who makes it to Eagle has been tested thoroughly.
Well, there's definitely there's definitely this thing of you get a momentum of achievement where you get it in your head that, you know, that number one, hope and pray for the best and prepare for the worst, and you kind of get that preparedness thing, and that you can, you know, if you, it's like a habit, you can achieve. Step by step or inch by inch, you can achieve greater things. And of course, you know, at this stage of Earth's evolutions, we're looking at humanity as kind of, you know, we've come a long way with a lot of very sophisticated technologies and understandings and a connection with this instant, everywhere, and interactive internet, this new net reality of, you know, we are all one. And now the big achievement or the big test will really be if we do arrive at a point of serious, I mean, cataclysmic Earth changes, which do not seem unrealistic from what I'm increasingly reading and networking with people that are really deeply following this understanding of galactic alignment, of our solar system with the galactic plane, and energies that are changing matter, changing our DNA and changing our consciousness. And that has very positive portents, but the testing will be of humans to rise to that, I call it a community conscience or a unity conscience, whereby if it comes to very serious Earth changes, it will be up to local groups that hang together, and there will be people that are good at gardening, there will be people that are good at hunting and gathering, and there will be, you know, people that are builders, and there will be healers, and there will be that whole thing of our respective gifts and talents are, you know, coming into unity, community.
Well, just and, to you know, speak a bit on, you mentioned the seed libraries, and that's a wonderful undertaking, but it's a lot easier to do with a group,
right,
where people can share tasks, and some might have especially strong skills in one area and others in another. I mean, an individual or a family can do it, but if you're collaborating with your neighbors, you can do it much more effectively.
That's right, and it's really going to take a level of collaboration that we're really not used to, you know.
Yeah, and the point I'd like to make is now's the time to do it. If you don't even have a garden, you can start turning the soil and sowing a cover crop now, through the late summer and autumn, in order to get the soil ready for planting next spring. If you're just trying to start a garden from scratch, whether it's on a lawn or some other plot of land in the spring, there's quite a bit of work that goes into getting the soil ready to receive the seeds. And so, you know, after you listen to this show...
Get the shovel and go for it.
get a plan, and the way to begin saving seed, of course, is to first acquire open pollinated as opposed to genetically modified seeds or hybrid seeds, because they won't reproduce true to form. So the thing to look for is open pollinated seeds, and then to do a little research and study to see how you can save them from year to year and improve them for the particular conditions of your backyard or your neighborhood or your community garden or community farm.
Is that what they call heritage seeds, those open-pollinated seeds?
Well, open-pollinated includes everything. Heritage are, you know, really have been handed down already for generations. Open-pollinated implies that they're going to reproduce true to form. So if you got a particular strain of corn this year and saved the seed, saved the kernels, you're going to get the same corn next summer and the summer after that. And it will evolve, but it won't make some drastic shift. It's not like they're going to catch a flounder and impress a gene from the flounder into your ear of corn.
Right.
And they actually did that with a tomato.
Oh, my gosh.
Put flounder, you know, and fish and tomatoes don't mate in nature.
No. And who knows what kind of a genetic crapshoot's going on in our DNA with that stuff.
Yeah, it's a vast subject unto its own. And, you know, one of the decisions I made long ago, Christopher, I'm acutely aware of all the distortions and perversions in the food chain, and they do need to be acknowledged, but I put my emphasis on the positive responses to the call of the land rather than kicking sand at everybody who, in my view, is doing things that are wrong or bad. You know, I mean, you got to name something when it's happening, but my main energy is not castigating the wrongdoers. It's supporting and empowering those who are making wise decisions.
Right. And, you know, I keep coming around to, you know, what is the most practical extension of my energies into the garden? When I say that, I'm, you know, looking at, you know, what food, you know, as far as protein, amino acids, and I know the Indians had, you know, really had it down to a science, at least for their lifestyle, or, you know, for, and that evolved over, and you know, the corn and beans and, you know, the amino acid.
And the squash.
Mm-hmm. And the squash. They were really into, you know, getting the balance of the amino acids for complete protein, and kind of goes back to a diet for a small planet, you know, Francis Moore Lampe.
Yes.
Who was really into, and there are books that explain that pretty well, and a lot of people just don't have a connection with which foods, you know, and which, and it, I mean, it's a subject that through the winter is a good time to be reading up on this kind of stuff. And of course, you can go on the internet at this time and just find massive amounts of information and some very practical stuff on you know, growing on just a few acres, you know, growing your food and things with how to raise chickens or goats and that kind of a thing.
Absolutely. And you know, if you just take a quick look at people who are eating a healthy diet of what I would call good foods, which are organic, or, you know, if it's meat, it's free range, and it's not infested with a lot of hormones, chemicals, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, irradiation, and Lord knows what else.
Yeah.
But if you look at the people who are eating the clean foods, and then just take a look also at people who are eating a lot of heavily processed foods, I don't have to describe it. You'll see a vivid difference. It's there. And also, I think you become dull in your intellect and your emotional capacities when you're eating heavily processed foods. But I don't need to go on at length with that. I think it's self-evident for those who open their eyes. And you're much more alert and vital and able to engage with life when you're eating clean. And the best way to ensure that is to either have a hand in producing the food yourself or be directly supporting people who are producing it for
you. Doing that, yeah. And I think that's we're going to see that that going on a lot more with, and we're seeing it here locally here in Montana with numerous food cooperatives, food farmers markets, and it really is to me. I that co-op cooperative concept is, and that was my first holistic health center, was a
Absolutely.
Natural foods store and eatery, and
Go ahead, Christopher.
Oh, that's going to say, that's when I really got into herbalism and whole foods, and it was both a retail storefront and a co-op in the community, the first one in Miami County back in Ohio.
Yeah, well, my experience is similar. I was educated in a similar way, and I think that's one of the high functions of co-ops, is they not only provide these good foods, but they do educate, and I'm on the board of directors for our co-op here in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Oh.
And I want to mention that 2012, in addition to everything the Mayans are saying about it, has been designated as the International Year of the Co-op by the United Nations. And there's a big meeting, interestingly, in Cancun, just a few kilometers away from Chichen Itza.
Uh-huh.
And here kind of mix everything together. I'm sort of a blender, a journalistic
blender. I like that, yeah.
But you and I, everyone in North America, lives on Turtle Island, okay? And the turtle is swimming south. And if you think of the Florida Panhandle and Baja California, those are kind of the front flippers. And if you go on up north of Montana into Canada, there's the tail of the turtle. But the head of the turtle comes down into Mexico, and the turtle is looking to the east. It's the Yucatan Peninsula. And you can see the mouth of the turtle is wide open, and there's an island there called Roatan off the coast of Belize and Honduras and Guatemala that's like the tongue. And the very crown chakra, the very top of the head of the turtle, is right about where Chichen Itza is. And there's where the capstone pyramid is, Caucucan, the Temple of Caucucan, or as the Spanish call it, El Castillo, the castle. And this, of course, is the place of Quetzalcoatl, and it's all tied in to the mythology, the teachings, and the mysteries of 2012. The Mayan elders have been going around and reawakening the 21,000 pyramids and temples of Mesoamerica since harmonic convergence, which probably a lot of people don't even remember that. That happened in August of 1987.
Uh-huh.
And according to the Mayan calendar, harmonic convergence in the summer of 87 initiated a 25-year period of transition leading up to the end of the calendar and the start of a new calendar, which will come, well, as Carl Kalman says, this November 2011, and as many others say, December of 2012. So we've been going through this era of transition, and it's about getting into balance and having a practical spirituality.
I think that there's a momentum of connecting that's going on as a function of this computer internet revolution, which is really an instant, everywhere, interactive net reality that's going global very quickly, or has gone global, and that just that sense of that you can have connection with people. I mean, I love talking to people with Skype all over the world, or, you know.
Yes.
But just to know, and just have a knowing, and this instant, everywhere interaction ultimately is the spirit of love and action, or the Holy Spirit of love and action. I mean, at the highest level, and there is an awakening to this is the divine destiny of Earth's evolutions, and as it is fulfilled, or as it is being fulfilled, there is an awakening to not just our highest aspirations of community, local and global, but there is a dealing with and a resolving of our greatest fears.
Yeah. Now, you know, you mentioned earlier, Christopher, the four directions and the four elements of earth, air, fire, and water. Well, the Mayan elders have reminded me, you know, that since classical times there's been a fifth element.
Ether, yeah.
Ether, and it comes into prominence as we enter the world of the fifth sun.
Fifth sun, right.
After the end of the Mayan calendar, the start of the new one is the realm of the fifth sun, and the fifth element really comes into its place. Now, ether is where all of the distinctions and the polarities are resolved. And it's a concept worth studying. It plays out on a physical, seemingly physical level with our cell phones and our computers, as you were just exploring in your remarks. Because if I'm on my cell phone and I call you on your cell phone, how does the message get to you? Obviously it goes to an antenna somewhere and then it's broadcast to you, but does it travel through the air per se? No, not really. It doesn't travel through the fire or the water or the earth. It travels through the ethers. All of these communication tools that we have with Wi-Fi and our smartphones and just on and on and on, and even the whole web of electricity and antennas and wires, those are all moving energy through the ethers. And they're, as you suggest, I concur, we're creating this global web of relationships, and it occurs first in the ethers and then on the more tangible elemental levels. And this is also where the polarities of up and down, right and left, masculine and feminine, or yin and yang, Republican, Democrat, light workers, dark workers, it's where the process of fusion can take place. And what appear to be absolutely irreconcilable opposites, you know, I could never, ever, you know, do anything with those people because that's who they are and it's the opposite of what I am. Well, that kind of polarity is just darn harmful on a personal level and certainly on a larger collective or social level. How are we ever going to resolve that? Well, the Mayan elders say that process happens in the ether. And it comes about not through me opposing you because you represent a different position, but, you know, by me listening and communicating with you and trying to understand your point of view. And hopefully you have the goodwill to try and understand mine. You know.
Yeah, it's the... I think the native cultures refer to it as the web of life. And
yes.
I like the quote by Chief Seattle who said, "Man did not weave the web of life, he is merely a strand in it. And whatever he does to the web, he does to himself."
That's so appropriate, yeah.
And, the way I think about ether, and this is back to the medicine wheel, the medicine wheel is, if you think of it as a circle and a cross through the center, you know, with the four winds. It's like looking down on a pyramid, and this whole concept of a pyramid and the capstone is like that circle, with the if you drew a circle at the round the capstone at the top and you're looking down on the pyramid, you have that medicine wheel, and the capstone is the ether. The four sides are the fire, air, water, and earth, but where they're all connected. Mm-hmm. And looking down on the pyramid, it's like the plan of the pyramid. You have a square with a cross, of course, the circle. You have concentric rings going out from that capstone. And the spherical consciousness that's truly spiritual is the connection of all four sides, is where they are resolved, their polarities. The concept of not dualities, the different sides, but polarity, the two in one, where they're connected, and
that's a very helpful perspective.
Mm-hmm. That metaphor of assembling the components to the capstone conscience, you know, the etheric conscience or the spiritual conscience, it's metaphoric, but if you look at native cultures throughout the world, their petroglyphs and their symbols as might say consciousness rebooted after the flood and the magnetic shift that did a mind wipe of the collective consciousness. It all began again with geometric thought forms, you know, spiritual geometry.
Well, if you go to the primary image of the flood that you just mentioned, the great flood, which of course, most of us in the Western world are familiar with through the story of Noah and the Ark, the biblical story of the flood. But that flood story actually turns up in over 200 cultures around the world, including Native America and Australia and New Zealand and just about anywhere you can think of, China, European cultures. the story of the Great Flood. So the sky sign was a half-circle rainbow.
Oh.
Remember, it was the covenant? Well, this time, now that we're in another era of transition, the sky sign is the full-circle rainbow, which is sometimes called the sunbow or the whirling rainbow. And in fact, I think that's how you and I got connected. I sent you some information about a little
on the twirling rainbow. Yeah,
well, whirling rainbow is how the Navajo speak of it. Tales of the Whirling Rainbow, which is a true nonfiction ebook that I wrote, because in 1995-96, I was part of a group that walked from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific. With under the guidance of Algonquin Hopi Indian elders, and our sign for the walk was this 360-degree rainbow that forms around the sun. And I don't know if you've ever seen one, but I see it about once a week, because the prophecy is, in the time of the white buffalo, and that's been with us since 1993, in the time of the white buffalo, the whirling rainbow will begin to appear more frequently as the sky sign of the era of transition. And, you know, just as you were suggesting about the medicine wheel, this is a rainbow medicine wheel in the sky, and there's room for everybody in it, every color, every faith, every orientation. You can't kick anybody out of that medicine wheel. You have to exclude yourself. You have to, you know, say either my narrowness or my fear or my hatred causes me to back away and not to want to be part of the circle. But I can't kick you out, and you can't kick me out. We're born into it. And this is one of the central teachings of the world of the fifth sun. And one of the central images is this circular rainbow, which is very often visible in the sky. I have to caution listeners, do not look directly at the sun. If you look up on a day, you know, either hold your hand so that it shields the direct light of the sun, or use a book, and it's often easier to see with sunglasses. But don't stare at the sun for too long. You will injure your eyes.
So really, the sacred hoop is a full spectrum rainbow.
Yes, absolutely, and it goes all the way around the circle, not just halfway.
Wow. Well, you know, I do some sun gazing very early in the morning sometimes, just for just very brief periods.
Oh, yeah, that's a wonderful discipline, but you know what you're doing. It's not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there is a caution there, and. I used to be a welder, and I know what arc flash is like.
Mm-hmm. <You know? laughs> We'll talk about fusion, yeah.
So I'm really intrigued with the signs of the times that are coming through the Mayan elders and the wisdom keepers in the native cultures. And I've had several speakers, authors on the show on Cosmic Love that have gone into different dimensions of it. I love your orientation to this understanding of ether and the fifth sun. I've known for some time that this fifth sun was, you might say, the key to integrity is integration of all the keys, all the winds. You know, this thing of balance or cooperation or co-creation with what I call source code. You know, there are and source code. You know, some would call it God conscience, but I frame it in terms of God as G-O-D, geometrically ordered divinity, or the geometry of divinity.
Yeah.
In other words, back to those pure archetypal thought forms, the law of the circle, which is like the law of the one, the law which corresponds to the right brain, which intuition and knowing. And then there's the cross, the symbol of the cross, or linear consciousness, is the left brain. And, you know, you have the linear consciousness in the left brain and spherical nonlinear consciousness in the right brain. And then the corpus callosum at the base of the brain does the brain switching between the two halves of the brain.
Yeah.
And that's the V. And so you've got the thesis, antithesis, synthesis, the best of both worlds. And this is the biological model going on between our ears. And it's also the archetypal principles of this of the circle, triangle, and the square. The square is the linear consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And the squaring of the circle is what goes on with the V, or the synthesis of the two. And these metaphors in sacred geometry, going back, you know, anciently, there was that understanding of and of course Jungian psychology that got into this understanding of the archetypes as a function of the collective unconscious and the collective conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And as you become conscious of that which was unconscious, it's like the principle of biofeedback, where they found that not only do, once you become conscious of involuntary or unconscious processes in the body, not only do you will to control, you can't resist conscious control.
Mm-hmm.
So self-control and self-mastery is a function of this process, and it's going on in the ethers of the collective consciousness.
Excuse me, you hadn't finished.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah, this is what I understand the fifth sun. It's
mm-hmm.
a nonlinear thing that's going on with the ethers, as there's an intelligence in the great central sun of our galaxy. And this intelligence, I mean, the great central sun of our galaxy is huge. And if you look at our galaxy from deep space, it's something like the Sombrero galaxy with a big flat plane of hundreds of billions of star systems, and in the center of it, it's like the, you know, where the head is there's this of a sombrero. There's this huge, great central sun, and they're pretty much in alignment. These, and Earth as our solar system orbits up through and in line with that galactic plane of hundreds of billions of star systems. Every 25,800 years, the precession of the equinoxes, and that's what the that's what the end of this Mayan calendar is about. That's what's
Absolutely.
Going on, according to Kalaman, here in October 27th or November. And the point being is that there is an intelligence in light, just like a laser beam can carry like a 1,000 YouTube videos and thousands of phone conversations on a carrier beam, you know, a laser beam can do that. So can, you know, this light from the great central sun has got the intelligence of these great cosmic beings, you might say. And this is what's rebooting our DNA. And scientists are saying that it's changing matter. It's changing the radiation decay rates. It's this energy that's just like this flux and this increase and even the power in light. People that have solar panels are saying that those that are monitoring their solar power output, that this last year that their solar panel output has increased by like almost 30%. There's a dramatic increase in energy that is measurable on a level of physical power, but light is a carrier beam, and the light from our sun resonates with all the in this aligning process. It's like a laser in the etheric space, in the ethers. There's a resonance with these hundreds of billions of star systems and the great central sun in alignment, and it's aligning, you know, the energies of hyperspace. Call it ether. And this is what's transmuting our DNA. It's transmuting our consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and it's rebooting, alignment with the great law.
Looking at it from the astrological perspective. Well, you mentioned the corpus callosum, which is that tissue in the brain that connects the right hemisphere with the left hemisphere.
Uh-huh.
In astrology, we would say that's ruled by the planetoid Chiron.
I didn't know that.
Was the wounded healer. Of course, we get the term chiropractor from Chiron also, as well as chiromancy, people who can read the lines in your hands.
Uh-huh.
But Chiron orbits outside Saturn, but inside Uranus. So it's in the zone between the inner planets and the outer planets. And likewise, the symbol, the astrological glyph for Chiron, is the key, because it's the key that can open up the pathway of communication between the inner and the outer, between the yin and the yang of the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere.
Interesting.
So the influences that you described are synthesized in our human consciousness on, you know, just looking at it on a material level through the matter of the corpus callosum. But, of course, there's a lot more going on than just physical processes in the brain.
Which is just an energetic matrix of you know, in the quantum field that is of the holographic field of all that is. It's just that's you know, that's the interface.
Yeah, so when I have, I'm a journalist, I do a lot of different things, but I've also been doing astrology for 30 years, and I always draw my clients' attention to where Chiron is in their charts, their natal charts, as well as where it's transiting now. It has a cycle of about 52 years to go all the way around the zodiac from Aries to Pisces. So Chiron can give a lot of information and clues about how an individual or any entity can integrate seemingly disparate energies and bring them to unity consciousness.
Well, this concept of the wounded healer has always fascinated me, and I've got two books on Chiron, and I track that in my astrology. Matter of fact, before the show, I pulled up the chart of the current transits. And I noticed that Chiron has been in a really unique, actually this last week, creative triangle, or the last several weeks, with a trine between Pluto and Jupiter that's with two sextiles into Chiron in Pisces.
Mm-hmm.
And this creative, you know, and again, I understand, I've been doing astrology about 30 years too, matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
And I'm fascinated with this. When I got into Chiron astrology, it really was a catalyst for, you know, my healing my own wounds.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I became conscious of how I was unconscious in a way that I not only willed for self-control, I couldn't resist it. You know,
yeah,
the biofeedback principle.
What's the old saying? You know, you can't heal yourself until you know where you're ill or where you're wounded.
Right.
So if you can name the wound, you're on the way.
You're on the way, yeah. Yeah, you can't come out of, you can't get on the path of healing until you come out of denial that you're sick and what the disease is.
Well, we see that with alcoholism and drug addiction and all its variations, you know, people just in denial. And then usually life circumstances lead them up to the wall, and when they hit the wall, then the healing begins.
Well, I really believe that there's a healing process in process right now, and that this process is in the ethers. It's nonlinear. It's going to happen, you might say, in spite of ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And that we're in one of the most unique times in cosmic history for Earth's evolutions, and that all the records of our woundedness going back to Atlantis and previous civilizations, those records are, you know, in process of being resolved. And with this, when I say unity and diversity and within our own conscience. And the thought form I have for this etheric healing is the holographic, sometimes called the cosmic cube between our ears. And you've got the upper brain, the lower brain, the left brain, the right brain, the forebrain,
mm-hmm.
and the rear brain. And you've got these three dimensions with a fourth dimensional orientation moment to moment in time that frames the fifth dimension of ether or the fifth sun. And that's that spherical consciousness of a whole that's far greater than the sum of the parts. And this holism in the holographic, you know, in the holodeck, we're all in between our ears,
uh-huh.
that is it's a healing process, and there's a catharsis going on, and it is you know, the healing of our wounds. And, I mean, I hold out for the thought forms and the visualizations that, you know, will, you know, empower the process. And we're coming pretty much to the end of our show. Could you sum up what you feel?
Well,
Stephen?
Yes, and I'd like to give my web address again, if I may, because if people go to thecalloftheland.com and then you know, of course, you can explore that website. But if you read the about, it tells a little bit about me. But then it also leads to my other websites that explore the astrological and the native elders and all the rest of that. So to sum up what I had to say, we are in a massive era of transition. I, like you, remain hopeful, and I think that the practical spirituality, particularly as it applies to food production, is the key to the pathway forward, and I encourage people not to think about it, but to get into action and to do something about producing their own food or supporting others directly. Get to know them, get to look them in the eye, but support others who produce food. And I'm excited to be alive in this era.
Oh, sure. Me too. That's an amazing time. Stephen, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Christopher.
And hope to see you on those cosmic highways.
Okay. Thanks a million.
Take care. God bless. And we're going to have a little guided meditation now for the rest of the show. And thanks to everyone for listening. And we'll see you in a couple weeks again.
So goodbye, Christopher.
Bye for now. Thanks, Stephen. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to this presentation on Cosmic Love. I hope you have enjoyed receiving this as much as I've enjoyed giving it. There's a new relationship with all humanity that is maturing with the new synchronicity of instant, everywhere, interactive, net reality. Cosmic Love is the heart of this synchronicity. Tools and processes that empower the wisdom of Cosmic Love is the purpose of the Worldwide Love Foundation. The family of man is now making a quantum leap into a new consciousness as never before in history. Our awareness as humankind is expanding, and the Internet reflects that multidimensional expansion of consciousness into new realms of omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence in the power of cosmic love. This has huge implications. The more information we have, the greater the need to get it all in order. The more knowledge power we have, the greater the need for the wisdom of cosmic love. That should be common sense, and it's time to make common sense more common. If you agree that the American Revolution was huge for freedom and opportunity in the world, look what's happening to the whole world now. A new connection with cosmic love is positioning the golden rule, law, language for a golden age in our spirit, our minds, our hearts, and the soul of humanity. We're on the threshold of a global revolution that is awakening the angels of our better nature. Let's be honest and reason together. Cosmic love has always been the golden rule law language for every golden age in cosmic history. Some things don't change, only the ability of the human mind to grasp the full implications of the world in which we now live. That has changed with the Internet, and like an adolescent who is not an adult yet, but not a child either, the Internet is now installed, operational, and ready to take our personal and planetary consciousness to the next level. That would be cosmic love, and the foundation principles for this is the Love Model, a universal law language interface for net reality that represents the five-dimensional intelligence that can fulfill a global revolution in higher consciousness. Check it out for yourself. See how it works. Consider the role you can play and how you can benefit. The sooner you get the vision of this cosmic love thing, the sooner you can profit from a wholly new economy that will transform all our social networks with extraordinary abundance of everything held sacred by free people worldwide. There is a new intelligence that is defining and refining humanity's evolutionary ascent. The higher the intelligence of universal cosmic love, the greater the results. The gateway to higher consciousness is, in fact, the language of consciousness. The five-dimensional intelligence that cosmic love frames in form and frequency, as in frequently. Once you get it, how the Holy Spirit of love and action can heal our individual and collective conscience, it will become self-evident how cosmic love can nurture and culture the net reality that brings a Holy Spirit to the collective consciousness of humanity. Love heals all, always has, always will. The more cosmic and universal the vision of love, the greater the results. Welcome to the opportunity. It's time to link the light workers who are love makers. The internet now provides this opportunity for extraordinary synchronicity as will empower wisdom with cosmic love. Someone had to do it. Now you can. Network for the net worth of this new net reality. You have the vision now before you. What you do with it can change your world and the world at large. We are all co-creators in the cosmic scheme of cosmic love. The great spirit of great love is the great opportunity that genuine freedom gives all of us. Heaven knows that there is nothing more valuable than the vision of cosmic love that has found its time. Experience the Worldwide Love Foundation in your consciousness, being, and world. Care enough to share this vision of great opportunity. Step into the circle of global connection as you center and connect with the five-dimensional intelligence of cosmic love that provides the cultural DNA for a golden age on Earth. Miracles happen when cosmic love is conceived, believed, and achieved. You are that miracle when you become the cosmic love you want to see in the world. Own this vision as your own. Embrace the intrinsic virtue of cosmic love. Make the vow to do what you can because you can. Claim the victory for all mankind aspiring to live as kind men. Here's to winning from the beginning of a global revolution that will finish worldwide with the great experiment and representative government gave humanity with the American Revolution. Heaven on earth is virtually in your hands. Do you want the keys to the kingdom? Are you ready to assemble the components to the capstone of cosmic love vision? Discover the five-dimensional intelligence that will empower your own virtually untapped gifts and talents. Consider how you can make a difference, if not the difference. It's your life, your world. Take command. Give cosmic love the chance that you want for all mankind. Now you can. See for yourself. Do it for cosmic love, and heaven knows cosmic love will bless your life far beyond this one. Sooner or later, what goes around comes around. You can call that good karma, or the justice of cosmic law, or just the blessings of cosmic love. It's the same thing. The abundant life is born in abundant love. The more cosmic that love, the more abundant is your life. Personally, I can't think of anything better to do, and I hope you feel the same way. So keep in touch with cosmic love. It only gets better as you pay attention. This is how cosmic love works. Pay attention because attention pays in ways that make cosmic love the new currency for global peace and prosperity. Your attention is your consciousness. The next economy for planetary civilization will pay attention to the value of virtue, the virtue of cosmic love. The family of man and our global village must be connected to this one virtue. We must pay attention to the first principles of higher consciousness if we are to transcend the old paradigms of scarcity consciousness that scarcity economics has created. This is the whole point of cosmic love. We won't heal our personal and planetary problems with the same consciousness that created the problems. The best hope for humanity is the charity of goodwill among mankind. This is the charity of cosmic love in action. This is the Holy Spirit of cosmic love in man that raises mankind with loving kindness. I hope you appreciate this message and share it with others. That may be just your circle of influence with family and friends, or it may be every news group or blog on the internet where light workers and enlightened netizens, global citizens, hang out. By the grace of cosmic love, enough good people will do enough soon enough to quickly turn the tide of global consciousness from the paradigm of scarcity to the paradigm of abundance that cosmic love cultures. May the quickening and awakening of consciousness begin with you and your own personal evolution in higher consciousness. Thanks again for listening to Cosmic Love.